Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. I had the chance to talk with pianist Jeffrey Siegel in advance of a program he was doing on the Golden Age of the Piano as part of his Keyboard Conversation series. Jeffrey Siegel, thank you so much for coming in.
It's always a pleasure to talk music with you, Susan. Thank you for inviting me.
We're talking today about the Golden Age of the Piano. What is the Golden Age of the Piano?
I'm sure there are colleagues and music historians who would perhaps disagree with me. But as I see it, the Golden Age of the Piano was, roughly speaking, the last two decades of the 19th century and the first two decades or so of the 20th century. And why do I say it was the Golden Age of the Piano? Because it seems to me that was the period where the piano was at its peak of popularity, not only as an instrument that was played in many public concerts, but also domestic music making. All kinds of concerts were given in homes and ballrooms and elegant hotels and so on. Concerts were given in small, intimate spaces. And it was a time, believe it or not, where it was the mark of an educated person to have a piano in your home and to study music and to be able to play. And so that was the peak of the popularity for the piano, both domestically and for public concerts. And what's interesting about the Golden Age is the music that one would tend to hear if you were invited to an elegant party in someone's home and there was going to be a pianist giving a program, or if you would happen to be going to the Academy of Music for a large public concert. What would you tend to be listening to? What repertoire would be played? Generally speaking, what you would not hear are the lengthy, weighty, very deep sonatas of Beethoven and Schubert. This was to come into the repertoire more frequently in the 20th century. Programs in those days were made up primarily of short pieces, of a very entertaining, engaging, lyrical manner. And also, it has to be said, pieces of music where the pianist could show off his astonishing keyboard virtuosity. And the program that we have coming up, the Golden Age of the Piano, is, if I may say so, a smorgasbord of very wonderful short pieces that were very prominently played during the Golden Age that have survived. They are classic in that respect. But some of them, if you will, were the absolute highlights of their time. For example, this minuet of Paderewski. It has an old world charm. He wrote it in 1886. Paderewski, as you know, Susan, was probably the most popular pianist from the time of Franz Liszt to Liberace. And wherever he went, he had to play this piece. It was one of the most popular piano pieces of all time. We hear it occasionally today, but it's very much a product of that golden age of the piano. We will hear on the program works from Mendelssohn's Songs Without Words and Grieg's lyric pieces. These are wonderful short pieces which were more popular in the Golden Age than perhaps they are today. They were so popular that it was said that if you walked into a home where there was a piano, your chances are pretty good that you were going to find a copy of the sheet music, the Mendelssohn's Song Without Words, and or Grieg's lyric pieces on the piano. This was so well known and loved.
Were composers writing music for the general public to play in their homes, or were they writing music to be performed by professional musicians?
And the answer to that is yes, both. The composers were writing music because they knew that there would be public concerts, of course, but they also were writing music for domestic music making, for the amateur to play for his own pleasure. For example, also on the program will be this very famous humoresque of Dvorak. Again, music of an old-fashioned charm, okay. What's so interesting about this, Susan, is that Dvorak himself could hardly play the piano at all. He was a string player. And yet, there's an enormous amount of solo piano music of Dvorak. This can also be said of Tchaikovsky and can also be said of Sibelius. There are more than 100 piano pieces of Sibelius and of Tchaikovsky. Neither one of them were virtuoso pianists nor public performing pianists. Why did they write so much piano music? Because publishers in those days knew that there was an enormous market for piano pieces, particularly of a not-so-virtuoso nature, that the amateur pianist could play for his own pleasure at home. There was an enormous market for this. So these great composers wrote some marvelous music, not for the public performance of the virtuoso, but for the amateur, the accomplished amateur, I should point out, to play for his own pleasure at home. And that's why we have such a wealth of great music of this, shall I say, more intimate nature from composers like Dvorak and Sibelius and Tchaikovsky.
And that's why we call this the golden age of the piano.
Because, that's it.
Because there was such a huge market for piano music.
The piano was at its peak of popularity, but of course, this is also music that people would be hearing in concert. But it was written and published with the accomplished amateur in mind.
And I noticed some of the composers you have on this program span all different nationalities,
right,
and go from Chopin to Gershwin. Mm. I gather this was a phenomenon that was sweeping Western Europe and the United States.
Yeah. With Gershwin, of course, we have the Roaring Twenties, which is, I would say, the tail end of the Golden Age. It was said of Gershwin that if he walked into a room where there was a piano, there was a magnetic pull which brought Gershwin to the piano, and he would play all night for those who were privileged enough to listen to him. We're also going to have music of a great virtuoso pianist that he wrote for his own stupendous keyboard technique, and that's Rachmaninoff, who is one of the greatest pianists this world will ever see. We're going to have a prelude of Rachmaninoff that he wrote in 1901, and this is a real concert piece. This is not for the amateur to play at home, although they do. He wrote this for himself, and it became enormously popular right away and remains a classic today. There were works also of Chopin and Liszt that were tremendously popular during the Golden Age that we might think of being a little old-fashioned today, like this Hungarian Rhapsody of Liszt. It was played all the time in the Golden Age, not only for the pianist to show off his virtuosity, but these saucy Hungarian melodies and vibrant rhythms which inspired this music on Liszt's part. You talk about, you know, the international bleeding, if so to speak, the fascination with music from one country to another. There is certainly that.
It looks as if there's tremendous variety in the tone and the level of difficulty. Could you illustrate two different pieces that are both from this era, but show the differences?
Yeah. One of the Song Without Words of Mendelssohn. There are 48 of them. And every music student, even today, does study the Song Without Words. But they should really be thought of as not just a musical feed for a music student, but the great concert pieces that they can be. One of them he gave a title to is called The Spinning Song. And I'll just play a little of it. The idea of an old-fashioned spinning wheel going and going and going, and a very happy tune that he writes with it, I guess to give the impression that who's ever doing the work at the spinning wheel seems to be enjoying him or herself. And then, completely different, but also from that was enormously popular during the time, is this work of Debussy's. An interesting story here, Susan. In 1910, Debussy loved to go to the Carlton Hotel in Paris about 5 o'clock in the afternoon to look at all the beautiful ladies who would be there. He loved beautiful women. And there was a gypsy fiddler called Maestro Leone who would be playing cafe music as these gorgeous ladies were walking by. And the specialty of Maestro Leone was la valse lente, the slow waltz. And perhaps as a spoof, Debussy decided to write a piece of music called Le Plus que lente, the more than slow waltz. But I think it got the better of him. It may have started out to be a spoof, but he writes this very nostalgic, somewhat wistful piece of music. And it became very popular during its day. And of course, he gave the manuscript and dedicated it to Maestro Leone. So it's another one of these pieces of music that has a wonderfully interesting background. And it shows us, if you will, a sentimental side of Debussy, which we normally don't see. So fascinating array of contrasting short pieces. I don't think there's any work on the program that's longer than 5 minutes.
I notice also that the Golden Age seems to end, or roughly end, about the same time that phonographs and radio took over. So I guess it's wonderful that we have this repertoire that continues, because now it's not as if the piano was replaced. It just, now there's the piano and you can listen to records and you can...
You've brought up a very good point. In those days, if you wanted to hear music in the Golden Age, you had to make it yourself or invite people to play for you. Piano duets, for example, were very popular in those days. Most people got to know their Beethoven symphonies and Mozart and Schubert symphonies, not by going to orchestra concerts, because there were very few of them, but the composers himself, Brahms in his case, arranged his symphonies for piano duets. Two pianists, four hands, 20 fingers at one keyboard. And people played this music for themselves for their own pleasure. There wasn't the surfeit of music that we have today and so many live concerts. So again, it's a different age. And you're absolutely right. When the phonograph came along and public concerts became more prevalent, it became a different musical culture.
Thank you so much, Jeffrey Siegel.
Thank you for inviting me to talk music with you again, Susan. It's always a pleasure.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.